I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the In the Pen podcast, a podcast about relievers, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Jake Crumpler, and as always, I'm joined by Pitcherless bullpen expert Rick Graham. And Rick, I purposefully withheld this information. I went to the A's game today. Yeah, somewhat embarrassingly as well. I was in left field in the bleachers, did not wear sunscreen. Very terrible game for a long time, like seven innings. It was 4-0. The A's were just playing awful defense and the Rockies were winning. And then, I'm in left field in the bleachers. There are zero clouds in the sky the whole day. So my arms are getting very sunburned. I'm like ready to go. I'm also like with my great step aunt. So I won't elaborate on that any further, just in case she's listening. But anyway, we stayed until like the top of the 11th where the Rockies took a 4-run lead. And I was like, all right, let's get out of here. Like I got stuff to do. I'm trying to get out of here. We've been here for hours sitting baking in the sun, and they came back.
They came back.
5 runs in the bottom of the 11th. This was their fifth inning in a row scoring as well. It was pretty crazy. And the only other game I've been to this year was the Patrick Bailey walk-off home run against David Bednar last month.
Right.
So pretty crazy year for me this far.
Games. Yeah,
that's right. Have you been to any games yet?
I have not. I was actually looking. I might head down to Fenway at some point this weekend. It's supposed to be good weather. And but yeah, I haven't been to a game yet. No.
Well, who knows? It might be a walk-off because I am 100% certain to experience a walk-off when I go. And I don't think I've ever seen a walk-off before.
Still a lot of weird things that happened in that game today. I mean, what happened with Mason Miller?
I was so pumped. That was one of the reasons. My aunt was saying, oh, like, let's leave when it gets to extras. And I was just like, oh, well, we're about to watch the best pitcher in the world pitch. Like, I think we should wait. And then he comes in, he's throwing like 98, 99, and throwing mostly sliders. And I was like, well, that's underwhelming. That's not what I signed up for. Yeah. And then he blew the game. But luckily, they got him off the hook for the loss. But yeah, Mason Miller was not what I expected seeing him in person for the first time, but hey,
I'm gonna blame it on you. Yeah.
I'll take it. Hey, they won, so I guess it doesn't really matter. Right. But yeah, we are In the Pen, Jake and Rick, we are here to talk relievers, and we can start it off with our news, injuries, and transactions from around the league over the past week. We'll then move on to our three up, three down section where we talk about the closers rising and falling on Rick's ranks. And then we will hit our main topic where we talk about pitchers that you can buy or sell low or high on. So we'll be looking at ERA under and over performers there. But we'll start it off with the news, and Evan Phillips, the closer for the Dodgers, threw a bullpen session on Saturday as he is making his return from an injury. The Dodgers said he would need 2 to 3 rehab outings before he can return. So he's still like 7 to 10 days from being able to make it back to the mound.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, I thought he might be back this weekend. It's a little bit of a delay. I think you can just tell with the Dodgers what they're doing. It's, you know, with Bobby Miller too, they're just being very careful, and there's no reason no reason to rush any of these guys back. And, you know, typical, this is what the Dodgers can afford to do. And, you know, just be patient, you know, lessen the innings and the workload on these guys. And yeah, I'm sure when Phillips gets back, he'll be fine. He'll go right back into the closer role. Hudson's been good in the interim, but yeah, it's going to be Phillips as the closer.
Yeah, so hold on to Daniel Hudson for at least another week as we await Evan Phillips' return. The next news, and it's probably the biggest news of the last week, I don't even think probably, I think it's very not undebatable. Edwin Diaz has been temporarily removed from the closer role for the Mets. I say let's return to that when we get to three up, three down. That's a big news there for Edwin Diaz. Kyle Hendricks of the Cubs is moving to the bullpen. So, you know, future closer in Chicago there.
It was funny. I was wondering if he threw an inning today. I was wondering if they would see any sort of velo like uptick at all. And it actually, I think he like lost like 0.7 miles per hour or something. Oh, so it's just, yeah. And he let up a couple runs. Yeah. It's sad to see. I mean, he was such a fun, you know, at one point, you know, he was such a fun pitcher who, you know, Greg Maddux-esque and not just the professor, but yeah, sad to see the wheels falling off here.
Yeah, I think the only like sub 90 relievers are like Dylan Floro and Tyler Rogers.
And Rogers is obviously, you know, the special.
So that's Kyle Hendricks moving to the bullpen for the Cubs. And then lastly, Brooks Raley, a lefty for the Mets, will undergo Tommy John surgery next week. So he is set to miss the remainder of the season and will probably miss all of next year, I would expect as well.
Yeah, from at this point, I mean, it's probably maybe he comes back in September of next year. But yeah, that's even doubtful, and at his age especially. So yeah, that's a big, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, I think, was it last week with, or maybe a couple weeks ago. They don't have, it's just Jake Diekman as like the only other lefty there. So I would expect if they do buy at the deadline, I don't know what they're going to be. But if they do buy, they're going to probably, you know, look to add another left-handed reliever.
Even if they don't buy at the deadline, I'm still interested to see what they do next year, because I doubt they'll want Jake Diekman on their team next year. I mean, he's great, but the guy is, you know, mid 30s. He's going to be late 30s. He's going to be 38 next year. And they don't really have anybody else to turn to outside of him. So I'd expect them to either dig deep into the trade pool for a southpaw for next year or go crazy in free agency to acquire some lefties.
Maybe they sign Tanner Scott or something. Yeah, I could see it. Yeah,
that makes sense. All right, we can move over to our injuries, starting with Jake Bird of the Rockies. He was placed on the 15-day IL with right elbow inflammation. He was one of the top setup men in Colorado, a not great bullpen right now. So that means Justin Lawrence, Tyler Kinley, and Victor Vodnik, and probably Nick Mears as well, will see more holds opportunities. But I wouldn't expect many of these guys to be rostered in standard holds leagues.
No. I'm still pretty much out on everyone in that bullpen. Vodnik's kind of interesting. Mears is kind of interesting. Coors it's not enough for me to like, you know, to recommend them when they pitch after games at Coors.
Yeah, you have to overlook a lot with that. So it's difficult. Like because it's not like these guys are somebody that if they were on another team, I would be like, oh, like sure, this guy's really interesting. I would be like, oh, he's a guy on the team and he is there. but that's what they have. And then they're also dealing with Coors with terrible pitching development staff in Colorado. Yeah, it's not a recipe for success. We can move over to the Yankees, who placed Ian Hamilton on the COVID IL, which that was surprising. I haven't seen, you don't see many of those nowadays, though I did have COVID this year, so I can relate. But he hits the 7-day IL, and then in a later corresponding move, Tommy Kahnle was activated from the 15-day IL. He was out with shoulder inflammation, and he should step right into a pretty significant role in the Bronx bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Hamilton going down. But either way, even if Hamilton was still still there, I think you know, I would imagine Kahnle has to be the top setup option there, assuming, you know, he's healthy. And his rehab outings went pretty well, so seems like he's healthy and, you know, back to where, you know, he was before the injury. I think that, yeah, it's like Luke Weaver's been pitching well, and I'm sure Weaver will still be in the mix for holds in the setup role, but Kahnle is definitely the preferred option there. I want to see like another week. I want to see how he, you know, looks this first week before really moving him up the rankings and holds leagues.
Yeah, that's Tommy Kahnle on the Yankees. We can move to Steven Wilson of the White Sox, who was placed on the 15-day IL with a back strain. Dominic Leone was activated from the 15-day IL to replace him in the bullpen. Leone was out with back tightness. So with Wilson out of the way, that means Jordan Leisure and John Brebbia are going to be the clear top setup men to closer Michael Kopech. And Dominic Leone, who struggled to a 7 ERA prior to the injury, could climb in there, especially because there's not many people in front of him. Right now it's like Jared Schuster, which not really your typical holds guy, a guy who was starting in the minors, but not a great bullpen at the moment.
No, and yeah, Leone's got a pretty good swing and strike rate. He always has. He just tends to give up a lot of hard contact, and his ERA is always high and higher than what his xFIP or Sierra suggests. So, yeah, Leone's an interesting ish back end holds option. Nothing really worth looking at unless you're in a really deep AL only or 30 team league or something, but. It's gonna be the Kopech show there until Leisure takes over at the deadline. If Kopech gets traded, I think he'll get traded. I would hope the White Sox do that.
I would assume he gets traded.
Yeah, pick up something for him.
All right, and our last IL placement is Emilio Pagan of the Reds, who was placed on the 15-day IL with right triceps tightness. The team also placed lefty Justin Wilson on the 15-day IL, so they are down two of their top setup men. Neither have been super spectacular this year, but that allows Lucas Sims to move into a more significant role. It was sort of unclear whether or not Pagan was above Sims in the ladder, but now there's no argument there that Sims will be above Pagan. And then Brent Suter will become the team's top left-handed option, though they do still have Sam Moll around as well. I don't think there is much to target here in terms of fantasy.
No, I mean, Pagan was pitching better. He was definitely making a run. I mean, I think there's a chance he was in the mix to take over the closer role there if he didn't get hurt. It's tough for him. Fernando Cruz has been pitching better lately. Sims has been pitching better. And Alexis Diaz's last two outings were pretty good. So, yeah, I think those are the three to look at there. But, yeah, outside of that, it gets really dicey.
All right, and now we can wrap up this section with the transactions from the past week. We had a trio of trades involving relatively unknown relievers. The first one was lefty Richard Lovelady being traded from the Cubs to the Rays. He will be one of the top left-handed options in that bullpen, but pitched to an 8.59 ERA for the Rays, or for the Cubs prior to his trade. Does he interest you now that he is on a team with incredible pitching development?
A little bit. I mean, he's kind of been intriguing for a while, or at least when he came up with the Royals. I mean, any name that goes to the Rays, you wonder what they're going to do. What are they going to tweak? What changes are they going to make? And it'll be interesting to see him, in a month from now or so, and see what's going on with him. But yeah, it's an interesting move to file away. It's not like the Robert Stevenson to the Rays move from last year, but it's definitely one to maybe keep an eye on.
The next trade is Mike Baumann, who was traded from the Orioles to the Mariners. This is another situation where a guy enters a great pitching development staff. Baumann pitched to a 3.44 ERA with the Orioles prior to his trade. Is he somebody that interests you now in Seattle?
A little bit, just because when we talked about, like, you know, the Mariners' depth in the bullpen, it's very thin at the moment. So if he gets off to a good start there, he could definitely move up the holds ladder. He's been on the holds list here and there. He's never really done anything to blow me away or make him a top 50 holds candidate or anything. But not the worst pitcher for the Mariners to take a flyer on. Is the back half of that bullpen is really, you know, a who's who of just random names a lot of people haven't heard of.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Okay. And then the last trade we have is Johan Ramirez, a righty who was traded from the Mets to the Dodgers. The Dodgers are currently dealing with a lot of injuries in that bullpen, so they'll bring Ramirez on probably just to stick around until somebody returns from the IL. They did option JP Fireisen to the minor leagues. He wasn't pitching too well, but neither was Ramirez on the Mets. 6.06 ERA in 16 and a third innings. I assume that you have no interest from a fantasy standpoint here.
Not at the moment, but it's the Dodgers, so yeah. Let's see. Yeah, again. It's kind of similar to the Rays, where it's like, let's see what kind of magic they can get from him. And yeah, maybe he goes on a little run in the second half. But yeah, he does have some interesting stuff. I mean, he throws pretty hard. We'll see. Let's see what the Dodgers do. It's probably not even worth looking up, but does he have options or is he going to have to be on the major league roster? He's out of options. That's why he was DFA'd. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, he probably doesn't last too long there. So no. Probably not worth your time.
Yeah. But it is interesting that like all three of these guys went from like decent pitching development organizations to like great pitching development organizations. So that could be something to keep an eye on. The second to last transaction we have from the past week is righty Pierce Johnson being activated from the 15-day IL by the Braves. He was out with elbow inflammation. He will return to being one of the top setup options in that bullpen, though. Joe Jimenez and AJ Minter have both been great this year. So he's probably the second setup guy from the right side there, but Pierce Johnson, I think, should be owned in the majority of holds leagues.
Yeah, especially the Braves are going to win enough games where they'll have use for both Johnson and Jimenez and Minter. His whip's kind of 1.39 whip's not great, but everything else, he's going to give you strikeouts, good ERA, and probably holds. Just, spamming that curveball 80% of the time. Interesting that he's become that, because a couple years ago, that's like not really what I thought was going to happen with him. I know he's always been a curveball dominant, but, in 2018, he was still fastball, curveball, and kind of a mix. 2020, he was a mix. And yeah, now it's just, and that's how the league's trending. And, it's just throw your slider, curveball a lot, and it's working.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. All right, and our last transaction is righty Alex Lang of the Tigers, who was optioned to the minors. Surprising after he was the team's closer throughout the season in 2023, as he accrued 26 saves and a 3.68 ERA. This year, his walk rate has been sky high, 19%, absolutely ridiculous. But his ERA wasn't terrible, 4.34, but I guess he just wasn't getting it done for the Tigers. So he's out, which means Andrew Chafin, Alex Fiedo, and Will Vest are climbing up the holds ladder. I think Chafin will be the top holds option in Detroit. And Alex Fiedo is sneaking up out of nowhere after being a former top starting pitching prospect.
Yeah, it's between those two. And honestly, this bullpen started off as being like sneaky good, and now it's not exactly too thrilled with what Chafin's been up to this year. Fayette is interesting, for sure. Yeah, now that he's in the bullpen full time. But yeah, the rest of it's a little bit dicey, so but Chafin gets a bit of a boost and Fayette as well. I know Lang struggled the last couple outings, but I'm still a little surprised. And, I just wonder if this is like, if he's just going to disappear now, kind of like, James Karinchak, or, he just goes, gets sent down. You're never going to see him again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be unfortunate. All right. Well, that will wrap up our transactions, injuries, and news section. Next, we'll move over to our three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling in Rick's ranks. But first, we're going to take a quick break here on In the Pen.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen talking relievers. We are entering our three up, three down section as we discuss the closers rising and falling on Rick's weekly closer ranks. We'll start with the guys climbing the list, opening with Craig Kimbrell of the Orioles, who has reclaimed the closer role in Baltimore. And he looked very solid in his first outing back. I think he struck out two in a perfect inning. And I don't have any reason to believe that he will lose the closer role anytime soon. It's basically just like, as long as his mechanics are good and his control is good, he's just the closer indefinitely.
Yeah. I feel like he's been like on this list or on this part of the podcast, like the last four shows, just on one side or the other. He's kind of yo-yoing back because, you know, he obviously had that period where he was struggling with his command. Got pulled from the closer job for like a minute, but like Cano didn't pitch well while Kimbrell wasn't the closer. I thought maybe, you know, some other guys might have a chance, like Coulomb or why am I blanking on Webb? His name? Yeah, Webb. And Webb's been pretty bad lately as well. So no one really took advantage of that opportunity. And yeah, Kimbrell, you know, turned it around rather quickly to his credit and you know, been dominant his past four outings, and the command with him and at this age, and like if he's dealing with back problems, I'm sure the mechanics are going to be, you know, hit or miss from time to time. But I do think he's still in the closer landscape right now, you know, a safe top 15, 16 option. And yeah, this might not be the last time he gets removed for a little bit as the closer, but it's this team's just going to give him he's going to have so many chances for saves here. You know, they've been winning a ton of close games. So yeah, it's a good spot for him and for fantasy managers who have him.
Yeah. And he's got all the underlying metrics backing him up as well. 37.5% strikeout rate. Yeah. All of his ERA estimators are at or below his current ERA. So I think he's a pretty solid hold and will be pretty reliable throughout the rest of the season. Our next riser is Jason Foley of the Tigers. This one's interesting, and I'm interested to hear why you have him moving up. The guy has not been pitching for a lot in the past few weeks and has not been recording saves. So he hasn't been pitching poorly. He just has not been appearing.
Yeah, the Tigers have been pretty bad lately. And yeah, he hasn't had any save chances, but at least I think just knowing that he's like we just talked about the Tigers bullpen, Foley's the only option there for saves. I know they've kind of use Chafin. I mean, he's not, Chafin shouldn't be used in a closer role unless you have three lefties coming up. That's the only way I would go that route if I were them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think he's just has a safe, you know, role right now where Lang's down in the minors and it's just and you know, Miller's out, so it's just Chafin really to you know, be a problem as far as him getting saves goes. And he's been pitching better lately after, you know, struggling for a bit. He's bounced back, and yeah, it's, he only has one save since April 28th, but that's just because the Tigers have just been, their offense is just putrid and they can't find ways to win games right now. So
yeah,
you know, sometimes the offense will blow up and they'll win by a lot, and yeah, there just haven't been any close games. So I think, you know, despite the lack of usage and the lack of saves, I think Foley might be, because right now, yeah, maybe it's a good buy low candidate because people are getting sick of him not getting saves, but it's going to turn around. It's just how baseball goes. It's how closers go. You know, you, 1 month you'll have 9 saves, the next month you'll have 3, the next month you'll have 12. It's it's going to change like that. So yeah, I'm pretty confident. I don't think he's like a top 15, 16 option, but top 20 or so is probably where he's about right now.
He got dropped in one of my NFBC 15 teamers. I was very surprised by that. I bid like $135 on him. It did not work because I think somebody got him for 180 something, but I was very surprised to see him there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, those leagues, it's always, you know, trying to find saves is a struggle at times. I should have done
like 200.
Yeah. I missed out on him early in the season. I was short like $17, and you look back on it and it's like, oh, I should have just gone an extra 20. But yeah, it's tough to tell.
All right. And our last riser is Jose Alvarado, a lefty for the Phillies. And this one also interesting because he has such stiff competition. Not only is there a better southpaw in the bullpen in Matt Strom, who's been pitching incredibly, but Jeff Hoffman continues to steal saves, including one today from Alvarado. Do you still see Alvarado as the clear-cut closer, or is it still like a co-closer situation? Why is he rising up your ranks?
It's still a co-closer situation. But and he's only right. I was trying to find a third riser, and I was trying to choose between a couple guys who went up like two spots this week. And you know, he's still in the 20s. It's not like he's in the teens or anything. But I think there are positives with him. And yeah, obviously Hoffman's starting to eat into some of his saves. But I think this Phillies team's maybe the best team in baseball right now, just as the way they're playing. Yeah. So the saves, there's plenty of saves to go around. I mean, he's already up to 9. He's, you know, he's still option 1A, I believe, to Hoffman being 1B. So, and it's, you know, more so that he's been pitching better. You know, at the beginning of the season, I was a little bit worried. The swing and miss wasn't there. But he's starting to kind of get back into a groove. I think it's, you know, we haven't seen any sort of like dominating streak like he had at the beginning of last year, but, he's still just been solid, and, you know, at least the walks, he's only got one walk in May, which is like, that's always been his issue. So as long as he's not walking people, I'm perfectly fine rostering him pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, he is sporting the lowest walk rate of his career, which is definitely interesting after he had lowered it last year and really taken a massive step forward. But the strikeouts have really dipped. So, yeah, I guess as long as we are limiting base runners, the overall, I think, results are going to be pretty similar to what they were previously, just with fewer strikeouts.
And it's, I mean, yeah, like when, you know, I'm looking at numbers right now and back on, you know, by April 8th, he had a 7.94 ERA, and he had allowed he's allowed 12 walks already in, you know, what is that, 8 games or so? And yeah, since then, he's only allowed 2 walks. And yeah, that's really crazy to see from Jose Alvarado. So hopefully, as long as he keeps that up, he doesn't need to strike out, you know, 2 or 3 batters a game. Just, you know, yeah, limit base runners. And do your job and get a couple strikeouts here and there, and we'll be fine.
Totally. Well, to accommodate the trio of relievers, or all of the relievers rising up the ranks, others have to fall down the ranks. So we'll discuss the relievers falling down the ranks, starting with Edwin Diaz, who was removed from the closer role in Queens. And that's pretty dramatic considering he's been one of the best closers in baseball throughout his career. But he has started the season with a 5.50 ERA through 18 innings, though he did blow a couple saves as well. I think he had like three in a row. He had three outings in a row where he surrendered runs and it just has not had a good month of May. But everything on the underlying side, all of his underlying metrics suggest he's been very unlucky this year. And so he's not somebody that's going to be dropped, but he's probably falling out of that top tier. And I know because I read the article that he's fallen completely off the list.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one for me with that list because I just ranked the closers and I don't know, mm-hmm. Putting him on the holds list, it's weird because like he's not going to get holds while he's like in this like transition period or whatever it is where he's just, they're trying to get his confidence back. But he's someone you're not dropping. And yeah, he should be like the headliner of our main segment with like buy low, he's your perfect buy low guy. He's still been good this year. Obviously, 11 runs over his past 10 innings is not great, but every other metric is pretty sound and it backs up that like the stuff's still there. And, 25.5% strikeout to minus walk rate. And a 2.39 Sierra while he allowed 11 runs over his past 10 innings. So a lot of bad luck. He does have a high BABIP, but he does tend to always have a high BABIP. It's just one of those, with him, it's going to happen. And it's just I think it's just been a really bad, just an unlucky, run here for him. He'll be fine. He'll get his confidence back. And I'm guessing early June, he'll be, back to being, the Edwin Diaz we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally agree. I think he's going to be fine. And this is, something that happens to all closers. It was it was sort of sad to read that he was like crying after the last save that he had. I was like, dang, that's he really taking this seriously.
Yeah, he cares a lot. And as his teammates, it's you got to love to see it that he's not just like, oh, whatever, he's making a lot of money. He could not care, but he does. He feels for his teammates and for his team when he lets them down. And yeah, this is even to the best closers, this happens. I mean, we saw how bad Josh Hader started off the year, and this is Diaz's moment. It's gonna happen to the best of them. But yeah, the best of them always bounce back too, and I expect that with Diaz.
Totally. Speaking of the best of them, Kenley Jansen used to be one of those, but he's fallen down the ranks as he's sporting reduced velocity, has seen his strikeout rate drop, and he's just not been the same guy that he was in years past. I think he's going to stick around, but the walk rate is really concerning at 14%, and that's really going to come back to bite him when the batted ball metrics start turning around. He's got a 0% home run to fly ball rate right now. So when he is walking and putting guys on base and then is giving up home runs, which are bound to come around sooner or later, those are going to be multi-run home runs. And that's going to really take big hits into his ERA, which is already looking like it's due for regression.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is kind of a thing I feel like I've been writing this about Kenley Jansen for the past couple of years around this time of the year where it's like his walk rate's like terrible. It's like, what's going on? And then he typically does figure it out and maybe he figures it out this year. I don't know. We're getting to a point in his career at his age where I don't know if like we can be so certain about that. And he's just like, he's kind of changed his velo's down and he's just throwing his cutter 92% of the time. Just like there's nothing. The slider's gone. The sinker's kind of gone. It's, this is the same pitch usage he had. That was funny. The same pitch usage and velo he had in 2012. So it's weird. It's different, obviously different times, different offensive approaches in the game today. I'm not sure this will stand as, since April 1st, he's got a 15.6 strikeout minus walk, 11% swinging strike, 28% CSW, 1.36 whip, 4.14 xFIP. It's not the worst numbers in the world, but he's more of a Kyle Finnegan, Carlos Estevez type right now, where it's like, kind of, I guess, a Toby, if you would call him that in the closer world.
Yeah, I think he's probably a sell high. I mean, just since we're going to be on the topic shortly, because he's still getting saves. So I think it's still pretty clear that he's the closer. So if somebody wants to pay up for a closer, I think Jansen is one that you can feel good about trading. He is overperforming all of his expected ERA metrics. And as Rick named off all the underlying advanced metrics, Jansen is not standing out in that regard either.
Yeah, again, not the worst closer option, but someone who's probably overrated at this point. And yeah, if you I would dangle him in a trade to see, if someone's desperate for a closer, I think it's a good time to sell high now.
Totally. All right, and the last closer falling down the ranks is Yoan Duran, who has not really taken off at the level that we expected him to. He was so good across the past two seasons. He started the year on the IL and has come back sporting an inflated ERA at 4.66 and a reduced strikeout rate down to 26% after being around 33% for his career. Are you concerned about this, or is this just like a move down the ranks until he gets back on track?
Yeah, this is another, like, I didn't really know what to pick for the third one, but he did move down. I put Andrés Muñoz ahead of him at this point. I think that's fairly similar, but Muñoz has been pitching a lot better lately. I mean, it's only been eight innings, so I'm not like terribly concerned with Duran, but the lack of strikeout stuff plus the usage, and it's getting a little bit little concerning as far as like if you drafted him as your number one closer, if no great second option right now, this might not, you might be getting decent ratios and a above average strikeout rate, but just like 15 saves. So that's not what you paid for. And, I don't know. We'll see. He had a long layoff with the injury. He's been out for a while. So hopefully he can turn things around and go on a run in May, June.
Mm-hmm. What I noticed is that the outings in which he surrendered runs were ones in which he appeared in non-save situations.
I mean, that does mess with guys. I just don't know why they're really doing it, because they didn't do it last year, and they have really good setup options and Jacks and the rest of that bullpen. It's weird what's going on, but it's a good point. I mean that's always been a thing with like Craig Kimbrel, is like in his career, it's like whenever he was in non-save situations, he would struggle. And I feel like Edwin Diaz almost was kind of like that for a little bit too. Yeah. So these guys who are used to just getting the ball in the ninth and going, it can be different. It can throw them off a little bit.
All right, Rocco, figure it out. Let's get Duran back into the closer role. But that will wrap up our three up, three down section. To recap, the closers rising up the ranks are Craig Kimbrel, Jason Foley, and Jose Alvarado, while the closers falling down the ranks are Edwin Diaz, completely off the ranks, Kenley Jansen, and Yoan Duran. Next, we will discuss our main topic of the podcast as we talk about players that are overperforming or underperforming in the ERA department, and discussing these under the premise of whether or not you should buy or sell and whether that's low or high. But first, we're going to take our second break here on In the Pen.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And we're back. Jake Crumpler here with Rick Graham on In the Pen, talking relievers. We are entering our main topic as we discuss buy or sell, low/high relievers that are underperforming or overperforming their ERA. Period. we'll start with just going through all of the closers, since those are usually the relievers that are rostered in the majority of leagues. We'll skip over most of them. The ones that have ERAs very much in line with their ERA estimators should generally be held or, you know, sold at their current value. I think the idea there is that players that have ERAs that are very similar to their ERA estimators are ones that have very clear value in terms of you can look at their ERA and be like, this is what they're going to be going forward. And so you can sell based on that. So when you have somebody like Kenley Jansen, you can sell high knowing that he's probably going to fall a little bit, but he doesn't have an ERA estimator that's more than a run higher or lower. I don't know how to do that. Higher than his ERA. And then Clay Holmes is sort of in the same boat as well, where it's like he's got a 1.74 ERA, but he doesn't have an ERA estimator that's really dramatically above his ERA. So he's also somebody that you can sell high, but it's not going to be like, oh, I'm going to sell high and then the guy who gets him is going to get screwed. No, they'll probably also get a pretty solid Clay Holmes.
Right.
So we'll focus on the ones that if you were to acquire them or try to trade them away, you'd be gaining value. You'd be improving your fantasy team. So we'll start in the AL West. I discussed Kimbrel, Jansen, and Holmes there. So we'll just go to Pete Fairbanks, who's got a 5.25 ERA, but that comes with a 2.54x ERA, a 3.36 xFIP, and a 3.46 Sierra. So he's clearly due for some positive regression and is a very clear buy low.
Yeah, and he's, you know, I wonder if we're going to see that kind of, you know, when he came back in June last year, he went on that torrid run for the rest of the season. And I wonder if we're going to see that again, because he's looked good since he returned from the IL here in May. So I think we're, you know, getting back to Pete Fairbanks here. Another situation, though, where I just hope that they stick with him in the ninth inning. Don't get too cute. I know it's been a couple outings where he's worked the eighth since he came back. But I think Fairbanks is a very good buy low. I'm getting my terms confused right now. Yeah. Buy low is too many. I know. Pete Fairbanks is a great buy low. But again, you don't want to. So I want to put the caveat with relievers and trading for them or trading them. I always am looking to trade relievers, especially if you can sell high, definitely do it. But I think if you can get, you know, an equal quality bat or starter for a reliever, I'm always kind of interested in doing that. So I think you can, you know, especially coming up in the deadline, you'll be able to find closers that can pick up saves for you and probably not blow up your ratio. So if you can get Fairbanks for cheap, that's great. Maybe if it's like for another reliever, or for a low end starter, or, you know, a kind of a bench bat, sure. But if you're giving up something of value, I'm still, you know, a little hesitant to do that.
Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of the coin with somebody like Fairbanks, if he is on your team, then hold him, because things are bound to turn around soon.
That's more of, I think that's the more important thing. Like the lesson or the value here is that, like, yeah, for Fairbanks, just hold on to him. You're probably not going to get anyone to sell to buy high here, obviously, with his ERA. So hold on, let things get better. And then maybe if, you know, he goes on a really good run here, maybe you think about selling high a little bit, or even selling even again, like you talked about.
Mm-hmm. Jordan Romano we have as a skip, but he's very interesting. 4.91 ERA. He's got a 3.79 Sierra, which suggests that he is underperforming, but then he's got a 5.95 xERA, which suggests he's overperforming somehow with a 4.91 ERA. Do you attribute that to just terrible batted ball metrics? And which side are you more inclined to believe is the true Jordan Romano?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised to see his Sierra at 3.79. I just the fact, I mean, I guess it's makes sense that's his lowest number. Because, yeah, he's been not, he hasn't been able to miss bats like we've seen from him in the past. It's not even, you know, it's kind of concerning because it's not something that just came on this year. It was kind of the second half of last year, too, where we started to see a little bit of, chinks in the armor or whatever the word is. But I don't know. He's a weird one because I want to believe the xERA at 5.95. But at the same time, you know, the stuff still looks from everything, from just looking at everything else, it looks like the stuff's still there. So I don't think the ERA is going to be at five, but I don't think it's going to be much lower than 3.79 if it even gets that low. I think he's just kind of this guy now. The Jays have been playing better lately, so we'll see what they do with the deadline. It's a very interesting team because they could sell a lot of pieces and Romano could be one of them, or they could maybe buy a little bit if they do go on a longer run here. So his role at the is going to be interesting. I think this is a situation where if you can sell Romano, if you can, you're probably not selling. You're not selling high. You're not selling low. But if you can sell not low, if someone's like, hey, like I know that name, Jordan Romano. He used to be a good closer. He's probably going to get me a ton of saves. You can sell to like someone like that. So a team, a manager that thinks like that, then sure. But yeah, he's probably someone you just got to hold and hope that, yeah, we see that Sierra kind of be the norm, not the xERA. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we'll move to the AL Central, where we'll skip over Michael Kopech, whose ERA is right in line with his estimators, though he could be considered a sell high because he's probably going to get traded at the deadline and will lose his closer status. So that's one that you could sell high on a little early. Emmanuel Clase is next. He's got a 0.36 ERA, but it comes with a 2.01 Sierra, 2.32 xERA, and a 2.32 xFIP. All of those numbers are great. So there is a big discrepancy between his ERA and his estimators. However, the estimators are so rosy that it seems like he should be a guy that you hold and probably not sell high. And I probably would not try to go acquire him because he's going to cost so much. But if you did want to go acquire him, you could buy high.
Yeah, I mean, you could buy high. I think he's just, I mean, he's so good, and this would never be anything I would want to do, is to buy an Emmanuel Clase type. But if you really do want to shore up saves, I guess it depends, you know, league context, team context. Mm-hmm. He's gonna finish with a 2.0 ERA around that, and you know, a ton of saves, and the strikeouts are even up this year. So yeah, he's the best reliever in the best closer in baseball, at least right now. But yeah, it's probably, you know, just a situation where the guy who's, you know, rostering him is not going to trade him, and or take you a ton to give up to get him.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you were to try to get him off your team and sell high, you probably would not be getting the return the value that you would hope for. Yeah.
Right.
So seems like a hold there. Jason Foley is next. He's got a 2.45 ERA, and that comes with a 3.67 Sierra, 3.69 xFIP, and a 4.40 xERA. Though I think he's a hold, and maybe even I wouldn't buy high on him. But I think he is a hold if he is on your team. As we discussed previously, there's nobody that's going to be taking over that closer role in Detroit. Though if you could possibly sell high, just considering how good his numbers look right now, and we don't really expect the ERA to be sub three throughout the year.
Yeah, it's a weird time, I guess, for him right now, because there might be a spot where you can sell high. I just don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, give it a couple weeks if he keeps this up. I'm definitely looking to sell. And like we were just talking about with him, he hasn't gotten a save since April 28th. So he's not a sell high yet, but someone who might be one in a month or so. So, yeah, I would be looking to move him if the price is right. But the next guy I'm definitely on the opposite end with.
Mm-hmm. James MacArthur, a clear buy low, 4.15 ERA, but it comes with a 2.65 Sierra, a 3.01 xFIP, and weirdly a 4.31 xERA, though sometimes xERA can be a little bit wonky just because it's relying so much on batted ball metrics and StatCast stuff. But Sierra is the one that's the best at predicting future ERA, and that's his lowest one. So I will take that. That's a huge difference between his 4.15 ERA and a 2.65 Sierra. And James MacArthur looks to have a pretty tight grasp on the closer role in Kansas City. Clear by low, right?
Yeah, I think the window might be, you know, shutting or close to shutting. Mm-hmm. He has been a little shaky here and there. The thing with him is, and it's same with Foley to that, you know, and it's, there's no competition for either of these guys right now. Mm-hmm. I think MacArthur is unless the Royals go out and they're playing so well right now, they could be aggressive and go and get a guy. But I think MacArthur is more than fine in the role for now. And, yeah, I think just because there's not a huge track record with him and the ERA is above four, that there's a chance you could probably, you know, get him for relatively cheap. So if you're in the market, if you're looking for like a second or third closer to just kind of shore things up, that's probably one of the top guys I would look at acquiring, depending on, you know, what the manager who has him's roster looks like and what their needs are. And if you can match up a deal, then yeah, I would look for it.
Mm-hmm. And I think Yoan Duran's also a buy low. He's got a 4.66 ERA, but it comes with a 2.94 Sierra, 3.12 xERA, and a 3.18 xFIP. That's Yoan Duran. And despite being used outside of the closer role, that may play into your hands even more in terms of if you're trying to acquire him, the value on Duran, the trade value might be lower. So I think Yoan Duran's a clear buy low as well.
Yeah, that window is definitely probably coming to a halt really quickly too, because
hop on it quickly.
Yeah, if you can get a frustrated, you know, manager to make a move to move Duran, then yeah, go for it. You know what? It would be nice too. We want Duran closing out games, but if, you know, say his next outing is like the eighth inning, and I could definitely see, you know, someone who's rostering him getting like, you know, fed up and like, all right, I'll move him for like a mid tier starter or an outfielder or something, you know, like I could see that being possible. So yeah, I would, you know, if you're in the market for, I don't know if you need saves, he's maybe not the best option just because we're not entirely sure what the you know, usage is going to be. But if you're just looking for a really good reliever who's going to chip in saves, you know, just to shore up your roster, then I would definitely take a look at Duran.
Mm-hmm. Points leagues, I think Duran's great.
Sure.
Because he's coming out of the bullpen, and no matter what he does, he's probably going to give you points. We'll move over to the AL West, and I think Josh Hader is another buy low, 4.09 ERA, but it comes with a 2.10 Sierra, a 2.14 xFIP, and a 2.52 xERA. Neither of us were super high on Hader entering this season, but I don't think we really expected him to be this bad, and he's still been one of the best strikeout arms in baseball. Are you buying low on Josh Hader, or is this like confirming everything that you had in the offseason about like avoiding him?
I would buy low, depending, again, it's like depends on the cost, but yeah, this is promising. He's really turned things around lately. Whoever, you know, rostered him, wherever they drafted him, they're not going to want to give him up for nothing or for cheap, so you're probably not going to be able to get, you know, up, you know, come out on top of the deal. But maybe if someone, you know, if they think Hader is more of a luxury, maybe they're willing to move him for, you know, relatively cheap. So someone to keep to look into. I think, you know, he's been a lot better lately. I think he's turned things around. And those, yeah, the Sierra, the 2.10 Sierra, 2.14 xFIP look really nice right now for him.
Yeah. A guy in our fantasy league, the one that you're in with me, has both Hader and Edwin Diaz. So I just sent an offer for Diaz, but we'll see. I probably shouldn't have told you that because now you're going to like undercut me.
I was looking at his roster, trying to figure out how I could get Edwin Diaz today.
So, yeah, I sent him an offer, but
good to know that he's got offers.
Yeah. We will see. Sticking in the AL West, Carlos Estevez is a weird one. The ERA estimator suggests a buy low. He's got a 5.06 ERA, but a 3.05 xERA, a 3.38 Sierra, and a 3.96 xFIP. However, we do not trust Carlos Estevez at all, and he just continues to hold on to the closer role in Anaheim. Is Estevez somebody that you'll be targeting, or do we just know what his skills are and that it doesn't really matter what his estimators are sitting at?
I am not targeting him. And I mean, if he was dropped, I'll take a flyer. But yeah, the 3.38 Sierra is interesting that's as low as it is, but that's not low enough. I mean, I want to, like, that's not low enough for me to really go out of my way to target him. But I guess if you're like really, really desperate for saves and you can't find him anywhere, then yeah, this might be a situation where you have to take a chance on someone like Estevez, if maybe like an AL only where you just haven't been able to find saves. But yeah, I think you can, you know, 12 team standard, I think you can find other ways to make up ground there. But if you can get him for next to nothing, or if it's just like a bench bat you're giving up, or your last, you know, starting pitcher on your roster, then yeah, maybe worth a look just to see what takes place here if Estevez is. But yeah, it's not someone I would actively go out and target.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then Mason Miller and Andres Munoz are both guys that you should either hold or buy high, probably, because they're beautiful ERAs are supported by great ERA estimators. Kirby Yates wraps up the American League. He's got a 0.98 ERA. Comes with a very, very good 1.82 expected ERA, but it comes also with a 3.06 Sierra and a 3.42 xFIP. I think Kirby Yates is one of the clearest sell highs.
Yeah, you exactly. That's I think I have him probably as my one or two, you know, as far as closers go, my top one or two sell high option. So I don't know exactly what you're gonna get here. That's the thing you have to find.
Kind I'm of hoping a, I can get Edwin Diaz. Yeah.
There you go. Well, that's I mean, that would be interesting. I'll have to veto that.
You don't have the power. I'm the commissioner.
That's not fair. No, I mean, I'm not just giving up on Yates. I'm not trading him for nothing. But yeah, I would make him available, and you know, someone's desperate for saves, then they might pay up a little bit here, because it's not just that Yates, the walks are kind of coming back. You know, I don't know. David Robertson, I still feel, has been better than him, and I do think that this Rangers team probably ends up with a new closer by the deadline, or at least a new, you know, high leverage reliever who could take over potentially.
Sure.
So. Yeah, I would try to sell higher now. And yeah, it's good for you because, I mean, Yates wasn't drafted anywhere really. So if you can take an asset that you picked up on the waiver wire and, you know, get something for him, and that's, you know, good managing.
All right. And we'll move over to the National League. Raisel Iglesias is first, 2.45 ERA, but a 3.05 xERA, a 4.08 Sierra, and a 4.35 xFIP. Raisel Iglesias is probably somebody you'll be fine holding throughout the year, but you've got a pretty clear shot to sell high while his ERA is below 2.5, and he's the clear closer in Atlanta.
Yeah, this is another one where I'm tempted to sell high, but I just, there's something about the security with Iglesias that, you know, is comforting. He's not the same guy he used to be. He's not missing bats like he used to. He's not a big strikeout guy anymore, but he's a closer, a reliable closer on a good team. So yeah, this would probably have to, it probably have to be a pretty good overpay for me to trade him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there is a bit of a concern there with the Sierra and xFIP, and the fact that he's just not able to miss bats anymore. It's it's really fallen off for him, his stuff wise. But at 2.45 ERA, we can't complain with that. And I don't know. It's a tough one, but yeah, I would want something. I would want a good amount. I would want a, you know, a good return. I wouldn't just sell him even. Yeah.
Yeah. And also maybe if you're in a situation where you have three or four like very solid closers and you need something elsewhere on your team, either in the rotation or in the lineup, and you can't decide like which guy you should trade and they're all good. Maybe Raisel Iglesias is the guy you trade because while he's still probably somebody everyone should hold, if you do have a ton of relievers, that's the guy that you could probably give up and not feel bad about it. Tanner Scott is another one where you can sell high. He's got a 1.71 ERA, which is a huge turnaround from his start to the season, and probably looks really great right next to his ERA from last year. But it comes with a 3.30 expected ERA, a 4.75 xFIP, and a 5.05 Sierra, as Scott just continues to walk the world and hasn't been the dominant reliever he was last year. I think this is maybe one of the clearest sell highs.
I mean, all right, I'm obviously a Tanner Scott guy here. Yeah. So I just don't think you're going to be able to get, like, trust me, I don't think you're going to be able to get anything because I've tried for him, and I've also tried acquiring him in other places, and no one wants to really give up on him. So I've had it's really like people are just kind of holding steady here, and this is my you know perspective, and because the 1 point, if we're just looking at ERA, 1.71 ERA.
Yeah,
but he's got a 1.43 WHIP, and anyone looks at that, they're going to be like, no, thank you. And he's only got six saves. And, you know, if anyone is, plugged into, his contract situation and how the Marlins are playing, they know he's going to get traded at some point and probably not be the closer wherever he ends up. So it's kind of just like if you drafted him, hold, then unless someone bites on the ERA, and the strikeout potential
and the 13 inning scoreless streak.
You're probably just your best bet's just to hold until he gets moved and then probably drop him while he's setting up games somewhere else.
All right. And then Edwin Diaz, we discussed already, not really a closer right now. I did put an asterisk next to his name, though he does have a 5.5 ERA. It comes with a 2.40 Sierra, 2.85X ERA, and a 2.88 XFIP. Very, very clear buy low.
Yeah, that's probably the number one. I mean, obviously the number one buy low. I just don't know what, like, we kind of talked with Hader. It's like, I don't, where the person who drafted him, where he was drafted, it's probably going to be take a lot for them to give up Diaz. And at that point, it's like, there are some, you start like trying to make a deal for him and you realize like, he is struggling. What if he doesn't turn it around? And that kind of creeps into your head and it's probably going to be hard to make a deal. So, and unless you're super confident that he's going to turn things around, which I'm confident, I'm not super, super confident because we just in relievers, it's really, you never know if, some of these guys just, fall off the face of the earth and really quickly it happens, skills diminish. But I would look to buy Edwin Diaz where you can, but it's probably going to take more than you expect when you go to make that deal. So I don't think Kirby Yates is going to get you Edwin Diaz.
Well, what if I said Kirby Yates and Jordan Montgomery? Two guys I got off the wire.
I mean,
he's declining it 100%. Though I did give him Colton Cowser for Ryan Pepiot. So we'll see how that works out.
Interesting. Yeah.
Jose Alvarado looks to be a hold at this point, and Kyle Finnegan looks to be a sell high as always. 1.89 ERA, 3.73 xFIP, 3.94 Sierra, and a 4.86 expected ERA. Also, he's got Hunter Harvey nipping at his heels all the time. Kyle Finnegan, the perpetual sell high.
Yeah, I mean, that's also better than I think we've seen. Better than his xFIP and Sierra usually look. So there's that.
Yikes.
Yeah, I mean, he is a sell high, but this is a situation where it's probably you gotta know the managers in your league, and someone who only looks at ERA and WHIP and that, and like, okay, yeah, you can sell him there, but other managers aren't gonna be, they're gonna know what Kyle Finnegan's story is, and it's maybe it's even a situation where I don't want to say you, I don't want to say you buy Kyle Finnegan, but like if I had him on a team, if I had him, I mean, I would probably give him up for almost, you know, anything, just knowing his track record. But I don't know. He's been pitching well, and even I thought he was, as XFIP and Sierra would be a little bit better than that, but I don't know. It's probably best to just avoid him and move on from him or trade him if you can. But yeah, it's I would want, you know, a pretty good return for him if I had him.
All right. And then we can move over to Hector Neris of the Cubs, who I think is also a sell high, 2.50 ERA, but it comes with a 5.13 expected ERA, 5.31 Sierra, and a 5.38 XFIP. Not great. You are probably not going to sneak him by many really good fantasy managers, because it's pretty easy to look up ERA estimators and his whip is sky high. But he is the closer in Chicago, so if somebody is really desperate for saves, they may pay up for Hector Neris.
Yeah, you might have a chance. I doubt it, but yeah, there's a chance. If you can get anything for him right now, you do it. If it's anything that's useful, that, you know, you're not someone you're going to drop right away, or, you know, if it's someone that you can actually, you know, have some use for, then yeah, make that trade, whatever it is, for Neris, because this isn't going to last. I don't know what they're going to do at the back end now. I know Ben Brown's back in the rotation. I thought he might be a good closer option. Maybe Wisniewski ends up being a decent closer option. Or Leiter takes over at some point. We'll see. It's not Hector Neris, though. It's just,
yeah,
it's not going to happen.
Doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Alexis Diaz is continuing to struggle, and I'm not really sure what to do here. I think I just don't want him on my team. He does have a 6.62 ERA, but underlying 3.94 expected ERA, 4.97 Sierra, and a 5.66 XFIP. I think those Sierra and XFIP both suggest that the 6 ERA is sort of earned. Both of those are very high, but the expected ERA is low, under 4. I think you can sort of write that off and be like, Alexis Diaz is not good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers right now, but like his like XFIP and Sierra since like the end of July last season is like in the mid 5s. It's so there's a big enough sample here where it's like, yeah, I think we've seen enough from him. And a funny story, in our pitcher list dynasty league, I put him on the block. I was like, hey, if anyone wants Alexis Diaz, I will take anything for him, picks, prospects, anything. No one in the 14 team league wanted anything to do with him. So I ended up just dropping him. It's a save hold league, you know. So I just don't, there's nothing, there's no reason to roster him in a save hold league where there's other guys on waivers that are interesting. I don't think he's gonna, at least not with the Reds. You know, he's an interesting case where I do wonder if he was on a different team, maybe they could figure something out with him. But with the Reds and just how he's pitching now, yeah, if you can sell him, sure. If you can't, I don't necessarily, you don't have to hold on to him much longer.
Since the beginning of August in last year, 5.39 Sierra, 6.08 XFIP, and StatCast doesn't say that. Yeah, that's bad. Not great. I think XERA is around here. Nope, it's not. Either way, terrible XFIP, terrible Sierra for like the last 1, 2, 3, 4, around 4 months. Not great for Alexis Diaz.
You see how many innings pitched that is?
I did not just close it out.
Whatever. It's a good amount. It's a fair sample size. Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And then Trevor McGill is going to be a skip. He's probably somebody you want to hold, and I might actually buy him right now, just considering where he is. Though, actually, maybe I wouldn't, just because Devin Williams is going to be back at some point. David Bednar is next, and I think he's a buy low, 7.45 ERA, but it comes with a 3.22 Sierra, an even 4 XFIP, and a 4.61 expected ERA. The XERA is not great, but I think you can usually write that one off if it's not in line with your narrative. Just kidding. but the 3.22 Sierra is more indicative of Bednar being better moving forward.
Right, yeah. I mean, in all seriousness, I would yeah, I'm more interested in seeing what Sierra says than XERA. So
yeah.
Yeah, Bednar's fine. He's going to be fine. He's fine right now. He's turned things around. He's just, it's going to take a while for that ERA to come down after the rocky start.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, if you can, if some manager is just like, you know, I don't like seeing that 7.45 ERA. And, you know, if you can buy a little bit low on him, then yeah, definitely go for it.
All right. And then to wrap up the NL Central, Ryan Helsley, I think, is a hold, maybe even a buy high since he's been pitching so well. Paul Sewald, also a hold, probably not somebody I'm going to go buy just because, I don't know. Paul Sewald sort of weirds me out. But Jalen Beeks is next for the Rockies. 2.42 ERA, but a 3.42 XERA, 4.95 Sierra, and a 5.21 XFIP. I did just watch him blow a save in person. So Jalen Beeks, clear sell high. I don't think anybody's going to be taking him off your hands, though.
Yeah, I don't know. He's probably not rostered, and you probably can't trade him. So, yeah, it's the Rockies. Yeah. I don't know. He shouldn't be rostered.
No.
Yeah.
All right. And then Evan Phillips is probably somebody that you hold as well. He's on the IL right now, so he can't really do much, but he does have a sub one ERA with great ERA estimators that aren't quite as good as his ERA, but still suggest he's going to be good going forward. Camilo Doval is already also somebody that we can skip. He's going to be like a low threes ERA, you know, no matter what. I think he's somebody you hold. And then lastly, Robert Suarez has a 0.42 ERA, but it comes with a 2.54 X ERA, a 3.01 Sierra, and a 3.61 XFIP. Robert Suarez seems to be a pretty clear sell high.
Yeah, the XFIP's a bit surprising because I, you know, looking at most of the underlying metrics up until, you know, recently, he had been performing pretty well. But yeah, I, you know, we kind of talked about him with how he's just throwing his fastball like 80 something percent of the time now. And it's been working, but I don't know. Does that's the way things are trending in baseball right now, it's like the guys who have upped their sliders and curveballs have been the ones who have had success. And Suarez is the only one doing it the other way. Or, yeah, he's the only one going the other way. And to such a huge degree where I think it's maybe throwing hitters off at the start of the season. But, yeah, I do wonder if they start, you know, I mean, obviously that ERA, the 0.42 ERA is not real. But then again, you know, if he does have a finish of an ERA of three, that's fine. But also, if he does get to three, what does that mean? What's going to happen for the next 4 months with him?
Yeah, that's always the question with these. It's like, does he pitch to that ERA estimator for the rest of the year? Like, is he a three ERA pitcher the rest of the year? Or is he going to pitch poorly enough to push his current ERA to that estimator? So that's always like the game you're playing with these stats.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I would definitely consider selling high. Depends on how, you know, I guess how hungry the other manager is for acquiring him.
Yeah, totally. Well, those are our buy low, sell high. I don't know, the ERA estimator and ERA guys that close out ball games. I have a place to be in very soon, and we have plenty of setup men to cover. So I think we return to this subject in a couple of weeks and discuss the setup men and holds guys that we can buy low or sell high on. But I think that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. Rick, why don't you plug what you're working on and your Twitter?
Yeah. Just working on three lists every week, the hold up, closing time, saves plus holds. You find me on Twitter at I am Rick Graham. And yeah, nothing else really going on at the moment.
Yeah. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jake Crumpler. You can follow the pod at In the Pen Pod. You can find all of my work at crumplerbaseball.com or over at Baseball HQ or over on pitcherlist.com on Sundays and all throughout the weekend. Yeah, great content over there at PitcherList. I've also got my personal podcast, Free Baseball, which is coming up on episode 100. We should reach that within the next few weeks. But if our listeners have any questions on a specific closer or reliever that they want our suggestion on whether or not they should sell or buy or whatever, if there's a trade offer you got and you're not sure what to do with it, go ahead and DM us if you need to, or join PL Pro or PL Plus, where you'll get access to the Discord and you'll have access to the entirety of the staff and our whole pitcherless community, where you can ask those questions as well. But that'll do it for this episode of In the Pen. We'll talk to you all next week.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With ERLEADA, apalutamide, being there is possible. ERLEADA is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. ERLEADA may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. ERLEADA can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if ERLEADA is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit ERLEADA.com. CP43-9267-V1.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.